Hey,
Oh, yeah.
welcome, Uwe Ball, everybody. We've got Dr. Ball here. I'm Gary Otto. Welcome to another episode of Uwe Ball Raw USA.
Yeah. How was New York and KISS? I saw only the few videos you posted, but it looked unbelievable.
Oh, my God. It was fucking absolutely amazing. I've seen bands like Rammstein before who put on, like, you know, a little bit of fire and a little bit of effects, but KISS outdid Rammstein by like 20. There was all sorts of stuff going on. There was they were on moving platforms. Paul Stanley grabbed onto a zip line and zip lined across the stadium to play a couple songs for the other side of the stadium. And the fact that he's like 74, 71 years old, it was pretty incredible. But I would have to say night one, there was two nights. It was December 1st and December 2nd was the last show. At the end of December 1st was a great show with a lot of energy. December 2nd, they unveiled at the very end of the show these avatar holograms of themselves. So I don't know how to feel about that. They look kind of like cartoons or something. It's a bad replacement for the band. There's nothing that can replace the band, but they're trying to. I just think it was like the wrong time to reveal it because a lot of people at the concert had no fucking idea what the hell they were watching. Like, you know.
what do they want? Like, they want to do like what ABBA did. Remember ABBA? They did that. They have a nonstop installation tour, basically, where only the avatars playing and people actually buying tickets for it. It's in Europe somewhere, you know, knowing me, knowing you, whatever, money, like the ABBA bullshit. So, and
it's produced by the people who did the ABBA thing.
Yeah. But what do they want to put them on tour just as avatars or what?
I think so. I think that what they're trying to say is that KISS will tour forever. They can be across the world playing a show in New York at the same time as playing a show in Tokyo because of these avatars. But like, I don't know, there's a lot of physicality that came with the performance, like that. I think that if it's not a real person, it's not going to be as exciting. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's crazy. And no, I mean, the real people, there's reason also the Stones are still on tour.
Yeah.
The thing is, like, you have to see them with your own eyes. And when they're actually too old or when they're over, they're over. And then it's retirement.
Are you going to go? Are you going to go see the Stones?
No. I watched them, I think, 7 times in my life. And they always put up a good show. But I don't even know if they come to Germany yet.
That's a good question. I mean, you could always come here and I could get you a ticket.
Rolling Stones World Tour concert.
Because last time they played the Rolling Stones, last time they played here in the U.S., the scalpers got a hold of the tickets and they fucking went for a whole lot of money. Right now, like, the nosebleed section way up high is like $200 per. It's not that bad. But like last time there were like thousands of dollars. It was ridiculous. I think because everybody thought they were going to drop dead, you know. But one of them did, I guess, the drummer, right? So
yeah. Charlie Watts. And so they do a big U.S. tour, and there's one in London in June 24. And they do only one concert in Europe, in England. How is that possible? I cannot even imagine. And then it's in the afternoon at 2:35. So that is strange. So in London, it's maybe something else, but they're coming to Vancouver, to the BC Stadium, whatever. And I mean, it's the only, I mean, they have enough money, but it's the only way as a musician to make money, right? Our world tours, look at how much money.
Most of these bands can't make money off album sales anymore.
No, but Taylor Swift, how much money she made, or Beyonce, or whatever, right? So they're making like $700 million on a tour for themselves.
You know, I looked up what Taylor Swift's net worth was, and she is worth $1.1 billion. That's fucking crazy.
Yeah. No, that is the thing. It's like it went totally out of control, I think, to be honest. The overpay of the elite, basically, right? And it was like I see it right now when I'm like I negotiate for actors and stuff for my film run, what I want to do in April. And now when the strike is over, exactly that happened. Like they totally overpay now all that actors. Like the 100 actors from 150,000 actors making a fucking fortune, and they can pick whatever show they want to do. They will never, like, this kind of, not only like the superstars, the 100, like the Ron Perlmans, the Ethan Hawke, the Mark Ruffalo, people like this, where you would say, not it's a superstar, but they're also making millions per film, millions. Millions per TV series, like per episode, they're all getting a million or one and a half for 5, 6 shooting days. And they're making now a killing because they're getting the participations more, and they're getting, like they get from everything more. But what happened also in the industry, I got today the overview about the US, a lot of that independent films, what got the waiver, are canceled. So independent films who got the SAG waiver to shoot during the strike because they were totally independent. So what happened was they were already in the map, like to shoot, right? And now what happened? Boom, strike is over. All the actors dropped them.
Weird.
Yeah, because all the actors now getting the big money from the streamers and studios again. And they say, oh, sorry, I admitted to your art house film to do this for $500,000 based on we're shooting it during the strike. Now the strike is over, and I play the lead in the new HBO 8-part miniseries, and I get $8 million.
Oh boy.
Yeah, but that is what happens. And I said that. I said that before, that exactly that will happen. And exactly this happens now, that we will have less films and TV series from the streamers and from the studios, less as before, but they spend enormous amounts of money for it. I watched yesterday on Apple TV, Fingernails. And Fingernails is with the guy, Jeremy Allen White, or whatever, the guy from The Bear, from the TV series The Bear, what is on Disney, where he opens a restaurant where he's a chef. And so this guy is great. He is great. And the other woman in it is also known. And they are like known actors, but not big stars. But the movie was so boring. It's basically about in the future, plays in the future, and all the whoever is a couple has to do this test if they really fit together. And when you don't fit, you basically split up, And it's about is that test valid or not? And but it's like it's boring. The film is not a comedy. It's not a drama. It's just boring. It's an idea. It's an idea you can use for 10 minutes, not longer.
Yeah,
And
a lot of these fucking streaming movies seem like good, clever ideas for like short films or something, not for a full fucking feature, you know?
exactly. It's like this kind of where you feel like why I should watch this now for 2 hours. So I fast forwarded to the film to see what actually happens. Is she coming together with another guy? Yeah, she's coming together with another guy. But it's like it's not like life and death experience, or where you have the feeling like you watch something important. Or I mean, it's just like films like this, I think, are ridiculous. And I bet they spent 30 or $40 million on that film for no reason. That was the classical art house film you should shot for $2 million. And no, because now the streamers, they're picking that 10, 20, 30 films per year, and they're just spending enormous amounts of money, and all that actors getting completely spoiled and overpaid. And I think that is the biggest threat for independent filmmaking. And I see that with I have huge problems in Europe to sell a first shift. It's insane. They're like, yeah, because the streamers are not buying right now. They're waiting, whatever. Like stuff like this. It's absolutely ridiculous. I'm super mad about it. I mean, everybody says, oh, first shift is great, but you don't have a star. We need a star. Yeah, I know, but if I have a star, I don't need you. Then I can sell it directly for whatever. You know, if Leonardo DiCaprio plays in First Shift, I don't need individual buyers in Europe. I make a deal with the studio. So, and, you know, and for, so the independent film distributors, I think they're making, they're not, they're basically getting replaced by nothing. I think they just will go bankrupt, all of them.
Yeah.
You know?
I think what people need to understand is that whoever, the people who are in any of your films, it will boost their visibility by 10,000 fold. Whether people want to admit it or not, even the people who hate your films, they still watch them. And a lot of people are still going to watch this movie. And these people are going to become famous in their own right, based on the star power of just being in one of your films.
Yeah, and that is the thing. I mean, I will work hard to get in Run some bigger names as I had on First Shift, you know, but it's obvious that right now you don't have to offer anything to anybody because they're getting bombarded with offers, all of them, because the strike was on so long.
Oh.
Yeah, so I have to wait. And then when I actually want to basically shoot in April 9, want to start, then I have to, like how I did it in very early years, I have to offer some good money to people that are not booked. Because in March, if you're like, whatever, Sylvester Stallone, and in March you're not booked for April, nobody will book you anymore. They all plan way earlier, right? So, but I can book you in March because we are ready to roll, basically, you know? So, yeah. So we will see. You know, I move this forward. I'm hardly working to deliver the Banditos doku. It's almost done. It's 2 hours, 20 minutes long. It's we couldn't cut it shorter. So that is sold to German-speaking. We will see where we're international with English subtitles. We can do some interviews are in English. And then we go from there. And then we have... First Shift, the delivery to the U.S. is going. So I hope in spring in U.S. it comes out on a few screens and then hopefully everywhere, including hopefully they decide to do some Blu-rays and DVDs, because I said there are fans, they want to still buy Blu-ray or DVD with my director's commentary, with the making of. I like that, the more old-fashioned delivery and not to be not on stream.
And to come back to Run, are you ready to tell people, your fans out there, what the film's about?
Yeah, it's basically, the biggest discussion, even in the US and in Europe, is the illegal migration, like the migration into the social, in Europe, social security from Europe, right? And from everywhere, from Africa, people coming with the boats every year, thousands dying on the ocean. And I do an action film, basically, where we follow one boat. And in the beginning, they throw people off the boat because the boat is sinking. And so they finally make it to the shore. And then they're in a little town and they're getting, most of them getting arrested. But the smugglers not. They're all criminals. And the smugglers escape. Others escape too and hiding in the little town. And then one of the refugees comes into a super stressful situation, flips completely out, and he gets killed after he heard already some tourists with a machete. And that situation boils up to a total, basically, that people attacking all the refugees. So it's kind of dystopian, harder film about how a situation could escape.
That know? Sounds wonderful. I mean, not wonderful, but it sounds amazing. It sounds like it's going to be a hard-hitting film, and I hope everybody out there is very excited that Uwe Boll is making more films. We've been waiting for this moment for so many years. It's a great time to be alive.
Yeah, and I have to say, like, you know, I get so many, like, advices, like, oh, do this, do this, do a child film with a lion, whatever, you know, like that is what the market wants to see. Do a film with a shark. So again, always this you know, like the tips. But the reality is, if you only follow trends where you're like 500 different films already done, you know, I know, and you know, and we all know that horror, for example, is of course the most profitable genre. But what we also know is, because you follow B and C movies and I follow B and C movies, we know that per year there are 500 cheap horror films shot and nobody ever talks about them. You know, and that Blumhouse and whatever, this kind of films, they mostly are not shot for $200,000 or $100,000 like Blair Witch Project was, or Paranormal Investigation, whatever the name was. So these are films that are shot for $4 to $10 million. And then they spend $50 million in advertising. And that is the reason these films, also the Still Halloween and all that stuff, they perform, because they have a studio marketing machine behind them. It's not like you shoot a film like Smile and out of the blue it makes $80 million box office. That is planned. So, of course, still, if you shoot a cheap horror film, you cannot lose so much money, but you are in a row with, like, you will end up in like some fast channels, horror channels, you know, like you go on YouTube where you get some money from. You are stranded with 500 DVDs sold and some internet income, but it's not like this film's getting bought by Amazon for $1 million or something. It's just not happening. And so, I mean, that is the reality of the business. And in retrospective now, the strike in the very end made two things very badly. The one is, now way less productions get greenlit, way less productions will get made by the studios and the streamers. So a lot of people will be out of work and will suffer. And the second is, as independent filmmakers, you will be like totally stranded and on the mercy of some license deals you can do. I mean, it's just like it, you know, because they have to pay so much more now. If they produce films, they have to pay every actor 20-30% more, crew members 20-30% more. You have to pay higher residuals to the unions. So what is the result? Like, okay, forget it. We're not shooting. We cut half of the productions off we were supposed to shoot. That is the result in the end of the strike. And because the strike was so long, all the actors you need to sell films, I will not do independent films. They will do only independent films if they think I get an Oscar for it. You know, if they think, oh, that filmmaker had an Oscar already. If he, like Lars von Trier or whatever, like if that guy wants me, I play for it. But like people like me who are known for genre films and commercial films, whatever, like, no thanks. And that is the bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's kind of ironic because Blumhouse started as a low-budget feature, a production house, and now you're right. Their movies are on the low end of the Hollywood spectrum, but they can afford to not have a star because of how much money they're pumping into the advertising, not just in trailers but on social media, in hopes that it goes viral, and it always does. So like, I think that the movies themselves are not always very good. Like only a couple of them are actually really any decent. They're exploitation flicks on a larger scale. And it's kind of bizarre that Hollywood has kind of taken over the exploitation flicks in-house. Very strange.
Yeah. No, it's really tough, you know. And then you see also they have to fulfill all this kind of writers, right? So they have to do this now, this whatever, mixed races, mixed religions, mixed sexuality has to be in every show. produced. And it's like, I'm a big fan of the morning show with Reese Witherspoon. And, you know, now she's a lesbian now in season three. And it started in season two. And why? You know, like, it's really like, okay, we need to fulfill this question with Singh also. They have enough colored people in it and whatever, you know. But then they had to do also this check mark they have to fulfill.
Well, it's distracting. Yeah, like,
recently,
I saw a movie in the theater, and two dudes started making out in the middle of the film. It had nothing to do with the plot. It didn't move the plot forward. It was super distracting, and I was like, whoa. And it's like, I don't know. It's so in your face, it seems kind of corny and cheesy almost. I hate to say that.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really brutal. You know, and then the other thing is, like, this week I've found it so absurd. Juliana Margulies, the Good Wife actress, she's also in the morning show, right? And she's Jewish. And she said crystal clear, like, she cannot believe that so many, like, Black and LGBTQ people were so silent on support for Israel after the Hamas massacres, right? And that it's even the opposite right now. If you go to Harvard and you go to all the universities and you go to the streets everywhere, it's like the Israelis getting basically shown as mass murderers now in Gaza. And they totally forget two things, that the Hamas started it all with the massacres. If they wouldn't did the massacres, there would be no military action from Israel in Gaza. So they started it all. The second is, what we shouldn't forget, is there are 130 hostages still. And also the people in Gaza could just tell where the Hamas terrorists are. Or the Hamas terrorists would say, we don't want any more of our people dying. So we give up. And we let the hostages go. And,
well, did you see what they were saying in the news? They were saying that Hamas is saying that the only hostages they have left are military hostages, and all of the women that are on their list were, like, sold off to other factions, and that they can't get them back. And Israeli people are kind of saying, or Israel's saying, well, you better get them back. You have control. But, like, apparently Hamas is saying that the groups that have these women think that they're so valuable, they refuse to give them back. It's going to be really hard to get those hostages back, I think.
Yeah, and I heard also that a lot of the hostages are actually dead, because there were a lot of babies not given back, and they were without the mother. So they assume that half of the 130 hostages are actually dead.
Oh, they God.
Died of rape and food and whatever. So, and they don't have them anymore. They're only acting like they have some. But coming to the point with Julia Margulis is, what happened the next day? Then she apologizes for offending Black and LGBTQ communities.
Oh, boy.
You know, but that is the thing what is pissing me off. And it's also a thing what I, you know, like, all these Hollywood phonies with their woke culture and then PR companies bullshit. You know, if you have that opinion, what I just said and what she said, then you should stay with it. You know, or you should shut their mouths and never say anything. I mean, that is the thing, but you cannot, and that is what I hate most, that the people, and all these people, especially in Hollywood, under pressure, because they want to be good for everybody, under pressure, they don't stand up for their opinions. You know, and that is...
they're afraid of losing work.
Yes, afraid of losing work. Yeah, but if you're so afraid of losing work and money whatsoever, then why you say anything? But what they do is, where they're digging always their basically grave with, is they say something because she's Jewish and she wanted to support the Jewish people in that conflict with Gaza, with the Palestinian. And she was mad. So she said on her first comments, she said how she really felt. You know, and then she got the pressure and the call from her publicist. Oh, you have to pull back. You could lose jobs. maybe they write you off the morning show because you offended all that communities and all, you know, like whatever. And I think it's like ridiculous, especially if you name the specific communities, like the, whatever, like, you know, this organization of black people are totally pro Palestina and they're black Muslims, whatever, and whatever, and supporting the Hamas. So, you know, and what I said, it's like, I think it's so cheesy and so bad to always pull back so much and then don't stay to your where you really stand. You should stand for it. And say, look, no, it's what I said yesterday. I stay with it, and everybody else can fuck themselves. There, I have to give Elon Musk credit. You know, when you're sitting and told to Bob Iger from Disney, he can fuck himself. You know, and then in the same interview, he said, yeah, Twitter goes bankrupt if nobody's doing advertising anymore. And I think Elon Musk. Is, of course, he's on the one hand crazy, on the other hand a genius, and he says a lot of things he is regretting the next day, but he's an original and he is natural.
I think the one thing that he has to work on is his impulsiveness. He just like flies off the first thing that comes into his head, and like it's 50-50 if it's offensive or not. So
yeah, and I mean, that, for example, he was so pro-Palestine and pro-Gaza and pro-Hamas and everything and Twitter. Then he flies to Israel, sees that the massacres were real, and switches completely over to Israel. And that is idiotic. That is childish. A lot of times he's totally childish reacting to things and not like an adult.
Yeah.
You know, by accident, he's the richest man on the planet, so he can afford it in a way, right? And I think it's this kind of, but it's also, I mean, in a world where everybody's so woke and so self-censored, it's kind of refreshing to have an Elon Musk on the playing field in a way.
Yeah, I don't have anything against him really, like some other people do. I think he's offended a lot of people, but I think that he's, like you said, I think he's a brilliant guy. He's got a lot of great ideas. Yeah, he didn't create Tesla, but he was smart enough to invest in it, and he grew. It grew, and I think his status is very impressive for his age.
Yeah, you know, no, I have to say, I'm a fan, in a way, and I'm also think he's out of his mind in the other way. You know, but he's at least an authentic person, and a lot of people, they want to come across so authentic, but they're the opposite to this, what the people think about them. That is where I have a real issue with. You know, I saw so many like twisted and two-faced people in the industry that it's kind of exhausting to figure everybody out of ways in general, right?
You know, something I was thinking about actually with all this cancel culture stuff and how everybody's so angry at everybody, if you break it all down, it really says a lot about people. People have this yearning, this desire to hate something, to hate other people. They want to feel superior to some other side. They create this like division. And I don't like it. I think it's bullshit. I wish that if you came across something that you didn't like, that you were able to process it and not act out impulsively, not like lash out like some kind of child and try and turn it into some, you know what I mean? Like, we should be able to just coexist. We're all people. We should be able to, if something is offensive, move away from it. You know, get away. If I see a crazy person walking down the street talking to himself, I choose to walk in the opposite direction, the other side of the street. It's so easy to do. I don't know. I wish that people weren't so thin-skinned, and I wish that people didn't have the desire to hate as much as they do. I don't know. I wish that people could love and enjoy life and appreciate that we're here and try and work together to make our world a better place instead of trying to dominate one another and shame each other. Shame on you for thinking this. Like, let's all have pride in who the fuck we are, you know? I don't know.
Did you saw that today on the ocean here in front of Israel, the Dead Sea and the Mediterranean Sea, whatever, like, there were, like, that rebels attacked some U.S. ships.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, and the Iranians are responsible for it. So that sounds very bad because we all know what can happen, right? So, and the last thing what the U.S. should do now is that they're getting dragged into a Middle East war. They, you know, I would not cruise around with the warships through all that countries. Yeah. And making themselves a target, you know. That is also something what, there I'm totally on the more Trump side, to be honest. Like, I think Biden and the Democrats, also Clinton before and whatever, they love to have some wars going.
Yeah, for the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. The Ukraine war is like going away. Like I said, it's a front war there in the south of the Ukraine continues. Good for the complex. Good for the defense budget. And then the, you know, to cruise too close to other countries' coastline could trigger aggression, and that is what is doing now. But it's always like the Americans, and when you read the CNN stuff about it, whatever, you think like, how could they? How dare? You know? But what would US do if, like, you have like a Iranian warship like 100 meters away when on the Statue of Liberty in front of New York? You know, like, I mean, like, what the fuck would US do?
I think the people would be fucking freaking the fuck out.
In New York, I would run all in the Bronx. So, you know, like, but the reality is, it's like you can also trigger shit like this. And the last thing is a bigger war in the Middle East, what we want, like the last. So, and, you know, and it's so idiotic. And then you see like the Trump, like the little campaign, what leaked out of the Trump camp, and
what leaked?
So it leaked like his plans when he's president again.
Oh, okay.
So there was an article I read today about it because he's like working with the Heritage Foundation too. So what he wants is, for example, he wants like 3 or 4 million people moved out of the U.S. with violent force right away.
Jeez, okay.
A ban of Muslims are not allowed to get into the U.S. Then he wants, of course, FBI and CIA. He wants to dismantle them, of course, in his own interest, so that there are no further investigation possible, right? So he's like really going full on. I'm the king, and now it's over with the democracy. And the Mike Johnson guy and Bill Maher on the weekend, they talked about the leader of the Congress, like the Mike Johnson. And
yeah,
the one guy who was there is an analyst, and he said, that guy, this kind of people, like the ultra-Christian nationalists, are the biggest threat for America because they don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in the democracy. And they really actively want to get out of this. The thing with the Supreme Court, with the Congress, with the Senate, they want to get rid of all of this. And they're working for a long time on this. And he said this are at least 25% of the Republicans are exactly like this. They don't believe in the Constitution, in democracy, and freedom. They think we should all serve God and should take all our rules from the Bible.
Yeah, and, which is fucking crazy because there should be a separation of church and state.
And it's written by John Adams and everybody, right? The way they say, like, that is the whole point. That we cannot have the church dominating the government. You know, so, and they want exactly this. And, I mean, you will find in the Bible a lot of things where you go away from the Ten Commandments or whatever, just go into the Psalms or whatever. You find, if you're a Bible Christ, you find reasons to kill everybody.
Yeah.
you know, an eye for an eye and whatever, or if he touches your daughter, he has to die. Like, basically, in the Bible is similar to the Quran. They have, like, tons of stuff in it. You can read the Bible, and you think it's the most peaceful religion ever. And then you can read the Quran, too. And then you read some other pages, and then it's, like, the most violent rules. And, I mean, it's so insane that we even have to think about this, talk about it. And what's happened, the dismantling of the democracy, I say right now, it looks more and more that dictatorships worldwide are winning.
Yeah. That
more and more of the world gets ruled. You sort of have the guy with the chainsaw in Argentina, the new president in Argentina.
He had a chainsaw?
Yeah. He doesn't. In Argentina, a completely crazy guy got elected, new president, and he's against everything. He wants to actually also omit the peso or whatever, the money. And he said, we end the Supreme Court or whatever. He's a completely maniac. And he ran in the election circle. He ran around with a chainsaw in his hand. He's the new president from Argentina. And then when you think about it, more and more countries getting ruled by people that are completely out of it.
And that's why we have to vote for Biden, even if we might not like him. I think that at least we'll still have a democracy and elections won't be predetermined as long as we have Biden or Democrats in power. I'm scared, honestly. It's a scary time to think that Trump could possibly win. And I keep telling myself that MAGA in general is supposed to only be about 20% of the freaking population, 20% of Americans, or is it 15% is MAGA? So it can't be that bad if everybody goes out to vote. So everybody go out and vote. Don't give me that shit that Biden's too old because Trump is right there fucking with him. And yeah,
like it's I mean, we discussed before, it would be better to have a younger Democratic president going against Trump. It would be better. But I think Biden wants to continue. So it will be the clash, Biden-Trump. Yeah. And Trump has better cards, right? I sent you on Google a link. If you click on WhatsApp a link, if you click it on, you see Mr. Chainsaw.
And how the yeah, guy. Let me see. Oh boy. New Argentina president.
Chainsaw wielding dog.
He looks like Leatherface from Texas Chainsaw.
Yeah. And look, he wants to go to US dollars as the currency. And that shows he has no idea from economy, because that is what in Europe a lot of countries getting ruined, because they cannot go against the inflation with their own currency. That was in the old days, right, when your economy goes down and you have to spend a little more money from the government to stimulate the economy. You can also devalue your money, for example. That it's, you know, like that the interest rates going up and down. So in the EU, you're part of the EU now. Everybody has the euro. And that is the reason countries like Italy or Greece or whatever, they're totally bankrupt because they cannot pay their debt. They cannot devalue the currency anymore because they are in euro. Yeah. And that is where in older days, like countries who are almost on the verge of bankruptcy, they just devalue their currency and then like pay the debt because it's basically worthless. But that was a way out of a misery. And so Argentina, of course, if they put the dollar, the US dollar as the only currency in, they will get bankrupt because the economy is not strong enough that the dollar debt they have, because they have to transform all the debt into US dollars, and then they're going bankrupt on it. Yeah. And that is also the thing, I think, what the most of the people are not aware anymore is that the whole economy worldwide is a debt-driven economy. Every single country, including US, including Germany, has so much debt that basically the whole world is completely bankrupt. But the show has to go on, so the Fed everywhere prints money, and you go deeper in debt every year. You know, not one government is able to pay the debt back or even the interest on the debt. But they don't file for bankruptcy because they all made the deal like, we have to keep going. Otherwise, we have a revolution that kills everybody. So we have to basically continue with inflation, with higher interest from time to time, and with creating more money. We say the market trusts us, we are stable. And then you had the 2008 banking disaster where, boom, the market faced reality and broke apart for a while. And then it got stabilized with debt.
Yeah.
You know, but that is the reality. The market crashed 2008 or 2001, and every single time. That is the reality. The reality is that the countries are bankrupt, but they covering it up, you know. Yeah. So and that is the thing. The 2008 was a very good market correction, but then they fixed it with new debt instead of going through a valley of tears and transforming the country, where you actually start spending only the money what comes in every year. You know, let's say you have $3 trillion coming in US every year, like the I don't know what the US budget is, but I think it's like 1.8 trillion or something. So 1.8 trillion coming in a real government, you should take 300 billion of it against the old debt. You pay it slowly back, and you should spend only 1.5 trillion for all the other shit you have to pay, military, everything. So this would be healthy. But what is the reality? The reality is you have the 1.8 trillion coming in, and you spend 2 trillion plus the interest on the debt you have to pay. So the debt continues to grow. So, and that every country has that. You know, maybe Switzerland doesn't have it. There are maybe 5 to 10 countries that don't have it, like the Saudis, because they have so much money from the oil. But every Western country is so deep in debt, it's basically a facade what is still running. Yeah. That is how it is.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a pretty pretty interesting topic.
Complicated. It's a different topic we talked about in the beginning, but I mean, it's from time to time, I think it's important to just see like background, you know, where you know, okay, that is the actual background, but we never face it and nobody gives a shit about it. But when you put this back to, before we finish for today, but put this back to all the media conglomerates, they, you know, besides Netflix, and Netflix has 30 billion debt. Netflix makes money, but has 30 billion debt.
Yeah.
And Disney and Warner, whatever, they're burning money. They're losing money. But are they getting clever? No. Instead, they keep overpaying talent, and they spend way too much money on productions you could shoot in the same quality for half of the money.
Well, that's exactly what their CEO just said about the Marvels. He said that they've been overspending. And just like you said, also, he says they're going to make less product, and they're going to be more careful about what they make, and they're going to possibly not make $250 million per picture anymore. Well, I'll believe it when I see it, of course. I think that's total bullshit, but...
Exactly. It's total bullshit because they don't go away from the same people that make the films. There are tons of people that just cannot make it cheaper. Napoleon with Joaquin Phoenix from Ridley Scott cost $200 million. I would shot the same film for $100 million.
Yeah.
You know, that is the thing. The same film with the same actors and the same shots. But they cannot, they just blindly give some talents, they think, blindly money, and they overspending it. They're shooting too slow. They're shooting not clever. The shooting schedules are not clever. You know, they just spend too much
money on stuff.
Yeah, they're also not experienced. A lot of directors, especially from high-end films, are just getting picked from film school almost. Like, oh, he's not burned. He never got a bad review because nobody knows him. So let's do the new Spider-Man with that guy. So, you know, it's exhausting, it's idiotic, and it's wrong. It's like there are so many films when I see them. I say, that film yesterday, the fingernails, I would shot that film frame by frame for $4 million. And, you know, and it's just like totally absurd. Because Apple told me they never spend under 25 million. So I know it was definitely over 25 million. So, and it's just like, it's so unclever. If I would be a big stockholder at Warner or Sony, whatever, you know, I would say, you know, guys, you need a guy like Uwe Boll controlling the budgets of the productions. Because he actually knows how it is to shoot films and can cut budgets without losing quality. I'm not talking about that I shoot a film, but they should need people like me who are used to look at In the Name of the King. Look at the cast from Dungeon Siege In the Name of the King. The cast is bigger as any other video game film ever done.
Yeah.
So and it was $65 million. $65 million for a film like this. I mean, look at the size, look at the length, look at the stars. So
and there's a lot of like stunt work in that film.
Yeah, and a lot of costumes and the orcs and all that stuff. So, but they give people for TV versions of Lord of the Rings, they spend $650 million. For TV versions of Game of Thrones, they spend $600-700 million with completely unknown actors.
Yeah.
You know, you think like, why are they doing this? How they would ever recoup any money with that stuff? That is completely insane.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really insane. And I can only tell the stockholders of all their companies, like, you know, you need like Bob Iger and people like this. They need a second tier managers who are actually like squeezing a budget. And telling like there will be no more Batman films if you cannot do a film for 100-120 million. Because a lot of times these films make no money. Look at this year, how many flops The Flash and the Ant-Man, and so many flops this year. And but all that films were maybe not flops if you would spend only 65 million how I did it with Dungeon Siege.
Yeah.
You know, but they're flops because they're spending $200 billion on them plus $200 million to market them, and then still nobody wants to watch it. You know, and but nobody wants to watch it. It's still $150-180 million box office worldwide. So it could work. This kind of continuing on some mini franchises, they could work, but not for this money you spend. Then it's really better to stop shooting all that bullshit. You know, I mean, I think it's insane. And the quality of the films is going downhill. That is the worst thing, that you have now only eye-catching bullshit, but you have no more stories, no more character development. I couldn't get anything like the Dungeon, the Game of the Thrones stuff or the Lord of the Rings stuff. I couldn't watch it. I watched 20 minutes each, and I felt like the new ones, like the new TV versions, right, the streaming version. I couldn't watch it.
Yeah,
it was so boring. It was so empty. And the heart was not there. It's all only CGI, but there is no more heart in that productions.
Yeah, well, the fucking new Lord of the Rings is like based on like his notes or something. It's very loosely based on the real thing. So I think I have no interest in even bothering to watch it. It's like the studio's version of Lord of the Rings, you know?
Yeah. No, it's very, very bad. I think they go in a total wrong direction, and I don't see them stopping it. I don't see them coming back to being like what Netflix was in the beginning, a real genre kind of alternative, you know, like this kind of thing. I think Netflix now wants to be like Disney, wants to be like Warner, wants to have that big tentpoles, the big films, overspending on actors. That is the route they started 2 years ago already.
Mm.
And it doesn't look for me that it goes back, you know. And I mean, it was good that Netflix at least bought Rampage 1, 2, 3, but that was also 2, 3 years ago. I don't think they would buy Rampage now anymore.
In this climate, yeah, that's a good point, huh? Everything's about escapism now.
Yeah, yeah. And but in the wrong way, in the boring way.
Yeah, I think that all the superhero shit is getting really fucking boring. And I don't know, how many times are we going to see the same fucking Spider-Man story over and over? And they're changing him to Miles Morales, the black guy. They're making a black Spider-Man for the screen, supposedly. And it's the same fucking story we've seen before. He's got like a black version of his aunt and his uncle. And like, you know what I mean? It's like it's the same shit we've seen 1,000 times. It's not fresh anymore. Maybe it's because it keeps getting mopped down generation to generation that the kids pretend that it's fresh. But it's like when they're grown adults and they think that it's so fucking fresh and so awesome, like even I can see it's really boring now. Like, I don't care about fucking Batman's struggle because we've seen it for 20, 30, 40 years. You know what I mean? Fucking, we need something fresh or new. Or else it'll be like the video game crash in 82, where people will be so sick of it that it will destroy the entire genre. And you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like
It's so like they were writing it to the death.
Yeah. You know,
really likes this kind of, I don't need other Spider-Mans. I saw 3 or 4 different Spider-Mans.
Yeah.
I'm done with it. I saw 4 or 5 different Batmans. I'm done with it. I give a shit about him and his butler and whatsoever.
Yeah, exactly, dude.
They should stop all this totally bullshit. You know, it's just like nobody with the brain wants to see that. And they making only the people more stupid every day in producing only crap like this. They are guilty that the young kids from today have no contact or no feelings for cinema anymore, because they never know what a good film is. They never gave different films a chance. When we were young, we had to give totally different films every week a new chance. There came Casino or Goodfellas, they came Raging Bull, then they came JFK and Born on 4th of July, and then Dances with Wolves, you know, and then French Connection, and then this and this different Apocalypse Now, whatsoever. They came always, you know, where you feel this kind of like, yeah, this is film. It comes from all around the world. It's telling stories. They matter. Like my film Run Now, it's about the main subject matter on the fucking planet. How can I even have problems to finance it or to find actors? Because they're all lining up to play people in a cape. You know, it's so absurd. It's so absurd. And then whatever, look at John Cusack, Mark Ruffalo, follow them on Twitter. They're the whole day political Twittering shit out. And then they're playing in totally unimportant, unpolitical bullshit films.
You should try and get John Cusack. That would be a good one, honestly.
Yeah, I like John Cusack. I like all that actors. I like them, but it's kind of fake what they're pulling up here. You know, they should submit to me and say, can I play in that film? That is the reality. Now, yeah. Okay, let's wrap it up for today. And so,
yeah, everybody, please follow us on Twitter. I'm Gary Otto Zero. Uvaball is Uvaball7 on Twitter. He also has a Facebook if you want to follow him there. And we will see you next week. And maybe we'll take some of your questions next week. I know I posted asking if you guys had questions, but we'll take those next time, okay?
Okay. Bye.
All right. See you.